Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When California's Supreme Court decided last week that gays and lesbians should be allowed to marry just like other people, a jubilant Gavin Newsom, mayor of San Francisco, declared, "As California goes, so goes the nation." Well, we'll see. California opponents are already trying to override the ruling. Much of America seems to be shrugging it off. But California is huge, and the bar has been moved. This hour, On Point California's big move on gay marriage and what it means for the Golden State and the rest of the country. We will hear a lot of voices from California today, pro, con, and interpretive. Joining me first from Sacramento is Crystal Carrion. She is courts reporter for the Sacramento Bee. She's been covering the story for some time, was at the Supreme Court in San Francisco last Thursday when the ruling came down. Crystal, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So explain to us, the California court came into this at what point in the process?
The California court came into this legal foray at the very end. Of course, the Supreme Court here in our state is the ultimate say on the matter. They came in after a four-year odyssey that had started after San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom issued those marriage licenses to gay couples. Remember that? It was all over TV. There was a lot of fanfare and global interest in that. The court at that point, the high court had kind of issued this writ to say, well, you know, maybe it's illegal with what the city's doing. Kick it back to the courts and y'all try to figure out the legalities of this. It went to a San Francisco Superior Court judge who looked at the issue that Gavin Newsom was taking issue with, which was the prohibition on allowing gays and lesbians to marry. And that judge, Richard A. Kramer, ruled that, yes, indeed, that was unconstitutional. Flash forward to the appellate court, which then overrules that judge's opinion. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that sets the stage for this great legal battle before the state Supreme Court on that very issue of constitutionality.
Now, if we go back even further, Crystal, in 2000, you had Proposition 22. Californians went to the polls, and 60% of voters said no to gay marriage. How did the courts, have I got that right, and how did the court's ruling relate to that popular vote?
You're absolutely right. There is a lot of deep history involved with this issue. You're right. Back in the year 2000, a majority of Californians did vote for this proposition, the Defense of Marriage Act, Prop 22, which explicitly limited the definition of marriage to be between a man and a woman. It's a 14-worded initiative that passed overwhelmingly. Well, the court looked at Proposition 22 and invariably struck down that statutory language as unconstitutional. They struck down Proposition 22, which, depending on which side of the issue you stand on, and according to a lot of the dissenting opinions, there was a lot of question whether or not it was the proper role of the court to overstep the will of the people, as you will, as many of the opponents have pointed out.
But Crystal, what was the California High Court's legal rationale for its decision? How did it look at the California Constitution and pull this pro-gay marriage decision out of that Constitution?
It's very interesting because many of the Chief Justice's opinion, the Chief Justice Ronald George, who wrote the majority opinion, on some respects, his 121-page legal tome waxed poetic on this issue of marriage, but more importantly, the constitutional, this fundamental right among free men and women to marry. Many of his arguments were centered on that very issue. In fact, there was this earlier court decision, this milestone case that the High Court had decided back in 1948, which struck down the state's anti-miscegenation laws, lifting the ban on interracial couples and allowing them to marry. And that case, Perez v. Shaw, back in 1948, resonated quite significantly throughout the opinion, basically letting people, allowing people the right to choose the person of one choice. In fact, Justice George, during the oral arguments, read part of the Perez v. Shaw decision in court, and he says, marriage is a right to wed, quote-unquote, a person of one's choice.
So here's, it's not a ruling on a technicality, but tying it back to basic civil rights, the same kind of civil rights that we've seen asserted when it comes to race and gender and all the rest of the big civil rights cases for half a century.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the court at the same time recognized that, you know, society has held for a very long time these very rich and ancient ideas of what is marriage, you know, that being between a man and a woman. However, the court felt that, you know, given the history of gays and lesbians in our society, and given the move, especially in California, to afford them a good number of rights, you know, virtually right now, well, before the court decision, the Domestic Partnership Act here in California did afford gays and lesbians a good number of rights that mirrored those of spouses. But the court looked at that issue of marriage and what does it mean and what are some of the social implications. And there was this language that kept reverberating through the opinion, which stated that, you know, this word marriage affords dignity and respect. It gives these families and these unions legitimacy that under a parallel system such as domestic partnerships, it doesn't quite mean the same thing.
So the word itself, important, the court said, to the dignity and full rights of Californians. There may be a constitutional amendment push, or it's on the rails to push back against this. Let's listen for just a moment to a couple of leading politicians in your state, Crystal. Here's San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom talking with supporters after the California Supreme Court's ruling last week.
It's about human dignity. It's about civil rights. It's about time in California.
And then Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has said that he himself is opposed to gay marriage, but he accepts the ruling. Here he is in a back and forth with a reporter.
To me, what is important is that the court has spoken, and that's what the law that we follow.
But you said you don't believe in gay marriage, and you just said now to me that you don't have a problem with it. That seems...
I don't have a problem with it. I'm against it, but I have no problem with it.
Arnold Schwarzenegger saying what there, Crystal, that he was against it, but if this is the court's decision, he's on board with it.
He's being very politic, one would think. Immediately after the ruling came out, he did issue a two-sentence press release, you know, acknowledging and respecting the court's decision and then condemning this this effort to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot.
So where does that go? Where does that stand now? When will Californians next vote on gay marriage? Will they?
There's a very good likelihood that there will be that amendment on the ballot. At least that's what, you know, the opponents and the promoters of that amendment are saying. One of the key proponents behind that effort, this attorney here in Sacramento County by the name of Andrew Pugno, he's with this organization called ProtectMarriage.com. Mm. He was also with the Proposition 22 Legal Defense and Education Fund, which argued before the court. What Pugno is telling me is that, you know, they filled out all the paperwork, they had their signatures, and in fact they had 1.1 million people sign the petition to get that initiative on the ballot. That was, of course, that exceeded the 693,000 some number required by the state to qualify. And last time I checked, which was last night, the state elections office is still verifying many of those signatures just to make sure that everything's legal and valid before it is approved to be on the November ballot. But
very likely to be on that ballot in November and could be turned the other way right there. We're going to ask about that. Crystal, carry on with the Sacramento Bee. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's go right now to Washington and Jeff Kors. He's executive director of Equality California. It's a gay rights advocacy group, California-based, but in Washington today. Jeff Kors, thanks very much for being with us.
Great. Thanks for having me, Tom.
You've got a victory. Is it going to last?
It is going to last. We are confident that we will win in November. We're confident that the public will support this decision. You know, this is not a liberal court. It's a conservative court. Six of the seven judges were appointed by Republican governors. The chief judge who wrote the court was first appointed to the court system by Ronald Reagan and then moved to the Supreme Court by another Republican governor. Our Republican governor opposes this amendment. So it really is the fringe right-wing groups who are pushing the amendment. We do think they will qualify, but they were unable to get on the ballot in 2004, 2006 through their volunteers, and they had to actually spend $2 million to pay to get the signatures to buy their way onto the ballot.
Mr. Kors, do you think that this California High Court ruling says something that earlier steps have not? For example, of course, Massachusetts courts approved gay marriage several years ago now. Does the California step represent something new, different?
It does. I mean, one, it's California. One in eight Americans live there. So the impact of the decision, the number of people who can get married, the fact that people can come from anywhere and get married in California, which is not the case in Massachusetts, will have a tremendous impact. But the court's ruling was more than just allowing lesbian gay couples finally to have the freedom to marry. The court really focused in on what marriage is about. And it's not just about a bunch of rights and benefits. It's about dignity and respect, and the reason anyone gets married. You meet the person who you fall in love with and want to spend the rest of your life with. And the court totally understood it. The court also went beyond just talking about this issue. They said that sexual orientation discrimination requires the strictest scrutiny, the highest level, in analyzing whether a law violates the Constitution. That was not the situation in any of the other cases. So that's a very powerful ruling that will impact a whole host of laws relating to sexual orientation in California.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about California's big move on gay marriage and what it means for the Golden State and for the rest of the country. Joined right now from San Diego in California by Brian Brown. He is executive director for the California chapter of the National Organization for Marriage, which opposes the Supreme Court ruling. Brian Brown, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So, first of all, to the court's decision, what do you make of their reasoning? They looked at gay marriage, they looked at the California Constitution and said, this must be allowed as a matter of equal rights. How do you interpret it? How do you see it?
Well, I think it's important to from the beginning, say it was essentially one judge that forced same-sex marriage on the state of California. It was a 4-3 decision. If one judge would have found differently, we would have had a very different outcome. And I think this speaks to the general problem of the courts overreaching their role, no longer interpreting the law, but making the law up out of thin air. And that's essentially what the court did in California. I mean, look, it makes no sense to say that Californians throughout their entire history have not understood what marriage is and that they have been fundamentally wrong, that the core definition they've understood, that marriage is and only can be the union of a man and a woman, was bigoted and irrational, and now these robed justices have in their wisdom, shown them the right path and taken them from the path of bigotry. And that's essentially the type of thing the court's saying, except not in those words. So the outrage that is emanating out of California and throughout the country, I think, is very rightly placed. Courts have completely overstepped their bounds. They've gone against the democratic process. They've refused to listen to the over 60% of voters who've already voted to define marriage as the union of a man and a woman. And now the voters are going to have a chance to set things straight, and I'm very confident that they will. As you heard before, we had over 1.1 million signatures. It was obvious that the people of California wanted the Constitution to be amended by how quickly and willing they were to sign a constitutional amendment, simply defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman. And we are very, very confident that we'll not only be on the ballot in November, we are going to qualify, we're going to win. And so this decision is setting up the chance for the voters to tell the whole country that even in California, marriage is between a man and a woman, and that the overwhelming majority accept and understand that common sense notion.
Brian Brown, what about the court's argument equating a denial of gay marriage rights to racism that we saw incorporated into law in many states in this country not so many decades ago? They're saying if you deny, you know, gays the right to marriage, you're doing the same thing. You had Justice Joyce L. Kennard, saying this isn't judicial activism. She said the architects of the states and the nation's constitutions acknowledge, quoting her here, deeply rooted prejudices may lead majoritarian institutions to deny fundamental freedoms to unpopular minority groups. The most effective remedy for this form of oppression is an independent judiciary. What do you say to that, Mr. Brown?
Well, I think it needs to be addressed with very clear thinking. I mean, one only needs to think very briefly about anti-miscegenation laws and the horrible effects of those laws to understand that laws, anti-miscegenation laws, were based upon keeping the races apart. The nature of marriage is to bring the sexes together. Men and women, mothers and fathers, are complementary, and marriage is a unique and special institution. The court's logic is flawed in so many ways. Every single argument they attempt to equate with race can be rebutted very simply by saying, look, they're essentially arguing that because two people define marriage by their love of one another, that they say, well, my subjective experience of love is what defines marriage, that somehow there is this right to redefine it in the way you want. Are we being bigoted or discriminatory against those who say, well, we want a group marriage, we want 3, 4, or 5 people married? Now, even if you say that isn't going to happen tomorrow, even if you say, well, there isn't no one's knocking down the door for group marriage, well, no one was knocking down the door for same-sex marriage 30 years ago. That isn't the question. The question is, logically, is there a core definition of marriage apart from me saying, well, I believe I should be able to marry, you know, this many people or this person?
Let me ask you about the big direction of things here. You've got many states now, 26, I think, with specific bars on gay marriage at this point. But now you've got California maybe moving into the other column. When you look at the country overall, you oppose it. But do you see the tide moving against you or with you, Mr. Brown?
No, I think that, again, what you have is you have a number of elites, and it doesn't matter whether they define themselves as Republican or Democrat. It really, that's not relevant. But you have a number of elites, both in the media and in government, who have a view that this is progressive, that we need to get on board with this and we're going to support it. But the overwhelming majority of citizens oppose it. And so there's an attempt to create this aura of inevitability. This is not inevitable. These same arguments were being made right before the 2004 election, when so many states overwhelmingly passed amendments defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman.
Mr. Brown, I've got more guests crowding in here, but we appreciate your time and your observations. They are joining us from San Francisco, Brian Brown, Executive Director of the California Chapter of the National Organization for Marriage. Thank you very much for being
Thank
with
you.
Us. I want to turn now to Douglas Kamek. He's professor of law at Pepperdine University, joins us from Malibu, California. He helped draft a legal brief against legalizing gay marriage in California, but has recently written that the court's ruling was pretty solidly legal. He's joined us with a pretty conservative bent on many issues in recent years. Douglas Kamek, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Tom, nice to be with you.
And with us from Charlottesville, Virginia, Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor and legal analyst for the online news magazine Slate, who we've spoken with on many issues of legal weight and weightiness. Dahlia, great to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
First to you, Dahlia. What do you make of the California court's ruling? Was it a surprise? And how do you see it? Do you see a court drift towards supporting gay marriage in this country at large or not?
Well, I think it was a surprise. I think folks thought it was going to come down the other way, and that's one of the reasons it was, as you said in your intro, such a lightning bolt. I think one thing that's probably worth pointing out, just in response to what Mr. Brown just said, is the contrast to what happened when Massachusetts in 2003 legalized gay mm-hmm. marriage. I just think this is worth flagging because it might help us frame these very, very inchoate conversations about which way popular opinion is trending. In 2003, when the Massachusetts Supreme Court really dropped a lightning bolt on the country and legalized gay marriage, 53% of the citizens of the state of Massachusetts were opposed to gay marriage, 35% supported. Within 2 years, Tom, by March of 2005, according to the Boston Globe, 56% of Massachusetts residents now supported gay marriage, 37% opposed. So that's really, I think it's fair to say, a sea change. in support that happen in a short time. Now, we can talk about whether or not that's a good thing, whether or not it's appropriate. And I think Doug is probably going to agree with me a little that it may not always be appropriate for the courts to launch that kind of sea change. But I think it's fair to say, when we're talking about trends, that when the citizenry looks around and says, hey, you know, I'm looking at my neighbors, there's a gay couple at the grocery store, it becomes sort of normalized in a way that I think really is incontrovertible. So to the extent that we're going to talk about which way trends go, I don't think you can assert the way Mr. Brown did that clearly this is going to galvanize a huge, huge backlash. At least the experience in Massachusetts tells us when the court legalizes gay marriage, the citizens do follow along. Now, I will just add one quick caveat to that, which is the way Massachusetts legalized gay marriage was fundamentally different from the way the California Supreme Court did it. And that will actually have an effect, I think.
Douglas Kamek, we've come to think of you as a pretty conservative guy, yet and I think you leaned against this in a legal brief. Yet you're writing fairly admiringly of the decision ultimately since it came down last week. If you had been on the California High Court, how would you have argued? How would you have voted?
Well, I would have voted against same-sex marriage for the reasons articulated in the brief, and they are largely reasons that, as Dahlia suggested, the court is not the right agency to give us this ruling. It ought to come in the form of a constitutional amendment. It ought to come from the people themselves. What I was admiring of Tom is that these are people of good faith on this court. They wrote in intelligent voices, and while their reasoning is reasoning that I disagree with because of the separation of powers, and because I do believe that as a matter of tradition, history, faith, social policy, and law, that marriage is by definition between a man and a woman, I think substantively wrong. But if you look at their analysis, one can understand how they got to the point that they reached. They identified the significant goods of marriage of friendship, of intimacy, as one of your first guests mentioned, often using the word dignity and respect, and demonstrated how, under the existing structure of the law, that oftentimes individuals in our state were being treated as second-class citizens, and they felt they had to address that judicially. Again, I would have been of the mind that should have been addressed by the people of California.
But is it possible, Douglas Kamek, for something to be against tradition and nevertheless required by the principles of a state or national constitution?
Well, here's the thing about the definition of yes, of course it is, but the. Here's where I think the essential disagreement in terms of the secular discussion about marriage occurs. And there's really two parts of this discussion. One is secular and one is religious. And we should, I think, note that. There is strong religious tradition that believes that marriage is not a civil institution. It's a religious institution, that the very definition of marriage comes from God, that he's the author of it, that it goes back, for example, to the book of Genesis and the creation story. And so one difficulty, Tom, we have now in light of the court's decision is how do we handle the large number of people in the country who have these deeply held religious beliefs? How do we accommodate them in a dignified and respectful way? So that's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is, are there non-religious reasons to oppose same-sex marriage? And I think there are, and there are reasons that were not particularly well addressed by the court, and they deal with not the goods of marriage, of intimacy and friendship. I think those things are indeed true whether you're a heterosexual or homosexual person, but the issue of the state's interest in sustaining itself by affirming relationships that are capable of and open to natural procreation. And one of the things that I think the state had as a reasonable non-religious justification is to point to the Western European experience and to some degree some United States experience as well, where populations are, even though we never see this on our crowded freeways, are declining.
Mm.
And as they are declining, there are social consequences that ripple through the system in very profound ways. You can readily see it in the bankruptcy of the Social Security system. You can see it in the extent to which there are not sufficient numbers of people to step up to defend countries in terms of military service.
Mm.
You can see it in terms of economic consequences in the marketplace in all sorts of different ways. That's a non-religious reason that I don't think the court dealt with very well in its opinion.
Hold the thought, if you would, please, for just a moment, Douglas Kamek. I have to say, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We have so many listeners calling in. I want to begin to turn to a couple here. Kyleen calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Kyleen, what do you think?
Hi, Tom.
I would be
what, you know, most people consider an evangelical Christian.
Okay.
And I just want to say, I'm young, I'm 23, and I think that there is a strong movement of young evangelical Christians who are not against gay marriage, and we're not for, you know, making it illegal. We think that it frustrates the cause of Christianity to really be fighting this kind of point of trying to make it illegal. We think, you know...
Kyleen, what do you say to your church elders or to other young evangelicals who don't agree with you when they say this is against biblical teaching?
I say that it's completely irrelevant to try to legislate morality. You know, Christians, our goal is not to make everybody moral. Our goal is, you know, really to live like Christ and to show people the love of Christ. And I think the legislation of morality doesn't change people's hearts or minds or attitudes towards Christianity. For a positive way, I think most of the time it makes their attitudes negative.
There's a broad-minded evangelical view from South Carolina. Let's get a view from Atlanta, Georgia. And Joe, hi, Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I want to echo that point. I really think that it's, you know, it's not a huge problem. I think that the problem for me comes in when you afford rights to married couples, but then, you know, you can't allow, you know, homosexual couples to marry, and so now all of a sudden you are denying people rights. And so it does go back to that, you know, when interracial marriage legislation from way back,
mm-hmm.
you know, it really does echo the same sort of denial of rights, because now all of a sudden you can't get visitation in the hospital. You can't, you know, collect inheritance and so forth. And it's funny for me to see the way that the social conservatives, who really are just, you know, the religious right, are constantly echoing back the same arguments, you know, that, oh, the next step is we're going to be, you know, marrying three people and, you know, marrying dogs and, you know, things like this. You know, it's a silly tantrum that they always bring up, and it's funny to see it come up every 4 years all of a sudden.
Maybe a tantrum, but a lot of tradition here as well, and tradition that may be changing. Joe, thanks for that call. Dahlia, I mean, this link back to civil rights, basic civil rights, as the California court put it, it sounds like a very powerful one. Is there a legal precedent here that echoes across the country, or does it stay confined to this one very big state?
Well, it is different from the Massachusetts decision in two ways, and I think one of your earlier guests flicked at it. It's different because the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision was specifically constrained to Massachusetts. The California Supreme Court decision is not. But the second, and this is going to sound very technical, but is this level of scrutiny. The court for the first time used what's called strict scrutiny, the highest level of scrutiny, to look at these laws. And that really is a profound change.
I'm Tom. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about California's big move on gay marriage and what it means for the Golden State and for the rest of the country. Dahlia Lithwick is with us, senior editor and legal analyst at the online news magazine Slate. She's really great. If you've heard her coverage of the Supreme Court, you know she's all over the big legal issues of this country. From Malibu, California, we're joined by Douglas Kamek, professor of law at Pepperdine University, generally conservative, helped draft a legal brief against legalizing gay marriage in California. But he's also written and spoken somewhat admiringly of the decision that came down 4-3 last week. Dahlia Lithwick has just put a couple of big issues on the table. Let me get a call or two, and then we'll turn to them. Logan's calling from Mason City, Iowa. Logan, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm from Iowa, and I'm sure most of you recall the events that unfolded last year with the one-day legalization of gay marriage and then the quick overturn of it the next day. My question to you is, or your guest, is that with everything going on in California now, I know the Midwest is kind of out of the picture, but I'm hoping that maybe the California will lead way for Iowa. I know right now we're going through several proceedings with the opponents and with the supporters of equal marriage, but I'm hoping, and maybe you can help me out, do you think this might lead the way? Do you think this will set the bar a little higher for Iowa, or do you think right now we're just going to be focusing on California and wait for the rest of the world to make their decision before Iowa?
Logan, let us look at what the knock-on or spillover effect might be, and thanks for your call. Doug Kamek, first to you. You have been quoted saying, you know, California marriage licenses will be exportable. What about the marriages themselves that take place in California? If they're Iowans or anybody else, will they be recognized outside the state? And more than that, does this big state's high court ruling have, necessarily legal ramifications for other states? Or is this every tub on its own bottom, everyone making their own interpretations of their own constitutions, Doug?
Well, there's a bit of every tub on its own bottom, but California is an influential state in a number of different ways, and Dahlia touched on one aspect of it, and that is that unlike Massachusetts, the California license is available to non-residents so that we have no waiting period. People can come from other states, they can get married here, and of course then go home to their sister state. Then the question is, what will the sister state, Iowa, do with the California license? Mm. One can anticipate that they will say Iowa law does not recognize it. Iowa public policy is against same-sex marriage. What that will trigger, Tom, it seems to me, is two types of defenses or litigations. One that focuses on the specific sister state's law, Iowa's law, and give the Iowa courts a new opportunity to reconsider their law in light of the California reasoning. They are, of course, not obliged to accede to California's reasoning, but let's point out that for the last several decades, California has been one of the most followed Supreme Courts in the country. Hmm. And has always been something of an exemplar court, not just because of its population, but because of some very talented jurists on that bench.
Mm-hmm.
And second, it will raise some questions about the Defense of Marriage Act, because one of the things we know is that in the Constitution there's a full faith and credit clause which says that in essence each sister state will give a presumption to acknowledging the judgments and records of other states, so that if somebody with a California license comes to Iowa, generally the presumption should be in favor of that license, except that states have the common law ability to raise public policy objections, and Congress sort of bolstered that with the Defense of Marriage Act. The question is, did Congress have the authority to bolster the state's ability to turn away other judgments and records from other states? And that's a constitutional question for which there is not a good answer, and I think will be readily litigated. So California is going to have an effect on other states in a number of different ways. There's going to be a large number of licenses out there. Those licenses are going to trigger a large number of cases under local law, and the Defense of Marriage Act will be challenged in terms of its constitutionality.
Dahlia, how do you anticipate California's decision will ripple across the country? Does it lean toward more acceptance? Does it ignite more
pushback? What do you expect?
First, can I just say, Tom, that I could listen to Doug Kmek talk all day and just
you and me both.
A pitch, which is that Doug is now blogging at Slate on Convictions, our legal blog, and I just want to urge
duly
your
noted.
Listeners
great.
to check him out. But I think that his point is I don't disagree. I think this opens a whole thicket of constitutional and legal problems about the effect of the federal DOMA, the 1996 federal act that, as he said, says that states are not forced to recognize out of state same-sex marriages.
DOMA, and the also, Defense of Marriage Act. There again, yes,
right. The DOMA, and then states actually 40 states went in. And further than that, and enacted what we call mini DOMAs, which are the sort of state Defense of Marriage Acts, which is the sort of, as we recall, that was the California law mm-hmm. at issue here. So we've got literally layers and layers of protection against states being forced to recognize. And on top of that, as Doug noted, there's also a public policy exception, a longstanding public policy exception that says even if you bracket these Defense of Marriage Acts, both at the state and federal level, states have always recognized a public policy exception in cases where they simply don't agree as a sort of a political matter with other states' definition of marriages. So be it polygamy or the age of consent, states have always been allowed to say, hey, we're just not going to recognize that kind of marriage here. So I think there are several layers. Admittedly, I think Doug is right. There's going to be a lot of litigation. But there's certainly a lot of layers of protection for states that simply hate this idea. That said, I think the political fallout is, as we've said from the beginning, really what's at issue here. We've now had several years to live with the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision, and it turns out, you know, the sky didn't fall down on us. Mm. And I think, as you heard from your caller, Kylene, earlier, there's a younger generation of even evangelicals growing up and saying, you know what, this is not where we should be expending our energy. This is a sort of moral culture war that is not particularly compelling or interesting anymore. And I do think more than anything, that symbolic war over the sort of cultural notions of whether gay couples are in fact entitled to the sort of dignity and respect that Justice George talked about, or whether in fact this leads us down some slippery slope to, you know, polygamy and you know, group marriage and other horrific things. I think most of America is just not in that latter camp anymore.
Doug Kmek, look out at the politics of this. The first line there may be California's own vote this November, very likely, about whether or not to change the Constitution to explicitly bar gay marriage. How do you see that, the odds of that passing? And if it passes, does that make the court's decision moot? And then look beyond that, if you would, to the presidential politics of this. Here we are in a presidential election year again with gay marriage back front and center. How do you see it, Doug?
Well, I do think the initiative will qualify for the ballot. The initiative basically adds to the California Constitution almost the very words that the California Supreme Court struck down that had been in the California Family Code and had been added to the Family Code by the last initiative. How will that come out? I actually think, Tom, it's much too close to call. Even though the last vote in 2000 was over 61% in favor of the traditional definition of marriage, more recent polling shows it almost evenly divided, and you throw into that mix a presidential race, which is, of course, we're still not quite sure who the nominees are. We might mm-hmm. find out today, or might have a better chance of knowing today. But let's assume it's between Senator Obama and Senator McCain. Senator Obama is running on a type of candidacy that is a candidacy of building bridges and unbuilding walls, as he says. Mm. And that's the kind of thing, and of course we know he has enormous attraction, especially for young voters, like your caller Kylene, mm-hmm. Perhaps. And if those voters are coming to the polls for purposes of that presidential election, it may well be that the initiative is in trouble in California. Kylene's call, if I might say, raises something that is in the California Supreme Court opinion that's worth paying attention to, and that is they suggested that maybe the way out of this is that the state ought not to be using the word marriage at all. That to acknowledge religious believers, that terminology can be given to them, And the most important thing is that the law be even-handed and that the terminology the state use, let's say enduring union, is going to be the only thing that the state allocates. That's an interesting approach, it seems to me, to start toward reconciliation, where you don't force anyone to change their religious beliefs because you allow them to have the special designation of marriage if they are part of a voluntary religious community, but at the same time you ensure equal justice under law in terms of the utilization of a single term for the license from the state so that stereotype and distinction is not drawn in that context.
Turn the concept of marriage over to the religious community and use some other language for the state. Dahlia, what about the presidential contest here? I mean, we read that McCain and Obama and Hillary Clinton all formally oppose gay marriage, but have leaned toward, you know, equal rights for, I guess, kind of civil union arrangements. What do you see unfolding here, Dahlia?
It's such a mishmash, Tom, and it's really interesting. I think that the fact that all three of them are sort of mincing their way toward a position on this suggests that how fraught this problem is for them. You know, McCain has absolutely been bombastic in his attacks on the judiciary in the last couple of weeks. That's been one of the ways he's tried to fire up the Republican base that
activist
was a little bit
judges.
Exactly, was a little wobbly on him. You might have expected, as a consequence, that he would have come out the chute first thing Friday morning, you know, setting his hair on fire about how awful the California courts were. The same way one of your earlier guests was. He didn't do that. He didn't do that because he's very happy attacking the judiciary, but he's got to be very, very careful about gay marriage because, as you said, he staked out a somewhat middle ground on this. Same holds true for Hillary Clinton. Same holds true for Obama. They've both gone on record with sort of different parts of the domestic of the DOMA that we talked about, the Defense of Marriage Act. They've both gone on record with slightly different takes on it. Hillary Clinton would repeal only the part of it that denies federal marriage benefits to couples. Obama wants the whole thing gutted. He has said both the provision that says that states can sort of protect themselves from one another and the federal denials should be repealed. So they've slightly different ground on this. But certainly they are also being very, very cautious because this puts them in a tough position. Both of them have been sort of kind of anti sort of gay marriage, but sort of kind of pro civil unions. So I think in some sense this might turn out to be a wash. If none of the major candidates really is comfortable talking about it, they may be able to avoid the situation. But as I said, it's a little trickier for McCain because he's really been banging the drum about how awful the judiciary is. And as you heard earlier, it's not just about, you know, attacks on liberal judges. He's been attacking judges, period, overstepping their bounds and taking it upon themselves to usurp the prerogatives of the voter. That kind of language is really, really hard to reconcile with a squishy or even quiet position on gay marriage.
Let's go to Donna in South Kingston, Rhode Island. Hi, Donna. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd be interested to hear what your guests comment on and how they feel about polygamy as a marriage. If you have the state of California allowing homosexuals to be married and have a legal marriage, who's to say that polygamy could not be reintroduced? And I take my comments off the air.
Donna, we'll go to that and go for an answer. Let me get one more call first because our time is going down here. From Natick, Massachusetts, Rhiannon. Rhiannon, you're on the air.
Hi. Just to echo a point that Dahlia made earlier, we celebrated 4 years on Sunday at our church of equal marriage. I'm a raging heterosexual. And my marriage has not been affected. It's no better and no worse. So
the Massachusetts law has not destroyed your heterosexual marriage. Okay, Rhiannon, we've got it. Doug Kamek, there's a thumbs up from a heterosexual married woman who feels, you know, her marriage is fine despite the change in Massachusetts. But another call saying, well, what about it? Where are the limits here? Polygamy is an active issue right now in Texas. You know, if you go down this road, does it open up a broader and broader interpretation of marriage generally?
The California Supreme Court answered that it does not, and the way that the California court answered that was to suggest that polygamous marriages, incestuous marriages, and other forms often involve third parties in ways that raise external harms that the same-sex marriage between two individuals does not. There's some analytical tension in that part of the opinion, quite frankly, in response to Donna, because they rely very heavily on history and tradition to argue against polygamy and incestuous marriage. And they, of course, bracketed off history and tradition with respect to traditional marriage in the context of the opinion. But they do also make the argument about external harm, which brings us to your second caller. Your second caller said her particular heterosexual marriage is not harmed. And for the most part, I think traditional couples didn't argue that their marriages would be harmed by homosexual marriage. The question is the social harm, the one I mentioned before, and that is the extent to which if you affirm largely an alternative form of a relationship, do you do long-term damage to what the Supreme Court declared when it first declared marriage in its traditional sense to be a fundamental right, something that relates to the very survival of the culture and the population? That's a legitimate question that social scientists debate that has very little to do with whether anybody's particular marriage is harmed.
Dolly Luthwick, our time is so short. If California should vote against it in November, is the whole thing moot? Is it done, or has the bar still been moved?
Oh, I think if they actually amend their constitution to preclude gay marriage, the Supreme Court decision that interprets the constitution is moot. I think the lasting effect, though, of this decision, and as I said, this radical new level of constitutional scrutiny would survive. But certainly, I think pragmatically, at least this battle would be over.
The whole country will be watching. Dolly Luthwick with Slate. Wonderful to have you as always. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Doug Kamek at Pepperdine, thank you very much, Professor Kamek.
Always good to be with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.